listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Welcome to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. I'm your host, Chef Smarty Pants, also known as Erica Wides. This is episode 60 now of the show, and we have a new name. We are now Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. So this has been a crazy year for weather here in the Northeast. I think we had this like the snowiest March ever, the wettest spring ever, the hottest August ever, and so on and so on and so on. I'm sure I'm not getting those months or those titles exactly right, but I know it's been a year of record-breaking weather, and it was like that almost the whole year, it seemed. We started out with massive snow, and then we had the driest summer. It's been this like wacky world of weather in the extreme, and it culminated in this big long drought that we had this summer, although of course now it's pouring rain here in Brooklyn. But this weird crazy early drought we had like made the leaves fall off the trees 2 months early, and it actually was so dry that I have this patch of mint growing in my garden that normally the mint goes nuts and tries to strangle out everything else, and the drought actually like killed the mint. You can't kill mint. Mint's indestructible, but it killed the mint. Maybe, I don't know. I think it was the heat. The mint died. Mint never dies. Mint is invincible. So with enough water, of course, you know, from the hose, watering, I managed to salvage my tomatoes and my mustard greens and all the other stuff that I grow on my little patio. But in the non-cultivated world of plants, things were tough. The things that were left to rely on nature for water, they had a kind of a hard time. And so, you know, you can't really drag a hose from your house a half mile out into the woods behind your house. So things were really dire out there in the woods. Our little house, our little bungalow that I've mentioned, backs up onto a state preserve. And I would need a really, really long hose to get out there in the woods and get some water on the ground. And the reason that I would want to get some water on the ground out there is because the forest got so dried out. And when the forest dries out, that totally throws a wrench into the works of the fungal world, mushrooms. And not having any moisture out there totally prevents all the usual mushrooms that grow in the region from fruiting this year. We had this dearth of mushrooms. Basically, the whole season was killed off, just dead mushroom year. There was nothing out there. So a couple of years ago, probably 3 or 4 years ago, Adam and I decided that we would become amateur mycologists. We like mushrooms, and a mycologist is a mushroom hunter. Although I guess the real word is a mushroom forager, because you're foraging, you're not hunting. But I like the idea of being a mushroom hunter, like sneaking up on a morel with a teeny tiny little rifle, and then popping a cap in the morel with your rifle, and then dragging it home. You know, like all the real like hunting kind of stuff, but without all the gore, without the death and gore and evisceration involved. So I like the idea of being a hunter, though. And I would actually really like to learn how to hunt. I think I'd be good at it. I'm a Sagittarius, and we are the archer. I was always good at archery in school when we did archery, so maybe I'd be a good hunter. But you have to take a class, of course, everything. You have to take a safety class. You have to get a license. You can't just go out and buy a gun and go shoot animals, at least not here, maybe like in the South or, you know, in, I don't know, Idaho. But here, you actually have to be licensed, and I just, every year, I can't seem to get around to doing that, to going and getting the license and taking the class and all that. And where I teach at ICE, I have a colleague who's, he's a funny guy. He's a former Gulf War Army Ranger sniper turned pastry chef. Yes, my colleague, Chad Pagano, used to be a sniper in the Gulf War in Saudi Arabia and is a manly man. But then he comes to work and he makes petty fours. And he hunts, and he voted for Bush, but I still really like him anyway. He has been my lesson in tolerance, because normally someone like Chad, we would not be friends, but I really like Chad. Anyway, he's a hunter, and he wants to start a hunt club with the ICE faculty, and I think I'll join. I think I'll be the girl in the hunt club, because what I really want is some antlers for the wall. And the meat, of course. But I really want some antlers to hang up in the little bungalow. But anyway, I'm digressing as usual. I'm getting off the subject. So back to the mushrooms. So a couple of years ago, we went to this lecture at the Museum of Natural History that was being given by Gary Linkoff. Now, Gary Linkoff is like Mr. Number One mushroom guru guy in the country. He's the source. He wrote the Audubon Guide to Mushrooms. So, like, if you get asked to write an Audubon Guide to something, you know a lot about that. And so we had been out just like, looking at mushrooms in the woods for a few summers, not really knowing anything about them, other than what I knew from being a chef for years and the edible species that I knew grew around here that I could recognize. I had once gone on a walk in New Hampshire with someone who showed me a few, you know, so I knew like 2-3 edible species, but you know, that was it. So we'd be out there all amateur-y, like picking every mushroom we could find, looking at them and then throwing them out because we were scared. So we went to this lecture and we said, oh, this is great. Let's learn more. So we decided to join the New York Mycological Society. Yes, every state has a mycological society, and there's one right here in New York, right in the city. And then somehow, through his great generosity, Adam wound up designing their website. They needed a new website. He volunteered, and then we got involved, and we started going on forays with them. Forays are mushroom walks, and then we would collect on our own on the weekends, and then on Monday nights, they'd have these ID sessions, and everybody'd bring everything they found over the weekend, and everybody would sit around very serious with microscopes and hand lenses and books and talk about the mushrooms. And it was good for a while. There were a couple of good years. There were a lot of mushrooms. It was good weather. But you know what? There are a lot of freaking species of mushrooms out there, and there's like a million different Latin terms you have to learn, and then there are common names, and then there's European names versus American names, and there's like all these different genus and species and look-alike species and spore printing you have to learn how to do, and then you need a microscope, and then you get down to things on the DNA level of identifying all the different mushrooms and doing DNA printing, and I just want to eat good mushrooms, so I got frustrated. It's like trying to learn a language as an adult. You realize how late you are to the game. That, like, if you had started learning this language 25 years ago when your brain was really absorbent and more flexible, it would be a lot easier. It's why you learn languages when you're a little kid, not when you're in your middle years of your life. It's just harder. So it's a lot to learn. It's like a few years, like 5-8 years ago, I thought, oh, you know, the whole, like, the flavor industry is really fascinating. I don't support processed foods or food manufacturing, but I was always really fascinated by the flavor and fragrance industry, and I thought it'd be really cool to be a flavorist, like a flavor chemist. So I started kind of looking around to do that, and I talked to a couple people in the industry, and they said, oh, yeah, you have to get a degree in chemistry, and then you have to do a 7-year internship, and you have to memorize 5,000 chemical compounds. So I changed my mind on that one, too. Becoming a flavorist is infinitely harder than becoming a serious mycologist, so I am remaining an amateur in both fields. We're going to take a very brief break, and when we come back, we're going to talk some more about mushrooms. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Fairway Market. Welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. I'm your host, Chef Smarty Pants, Erica Wise. So I'm talking about mushrooms. I'm talking about my adventures in becoming a mycologist and subsequent sort of giving up on that. But anyway, so after a while, we kind of trickled off from the mushroom scene, the mushroom club scene, because I found the ID sessions kind of unbearable some nights. I tend to run a little short in the patient's department as it is. And all I really wanted to know was whether my foragings were edible species or not. And there would be situations where I would have a mushroom and they'd say, well, it's edible. I wouldn't recommend eating it. You could eat it. Nobody really knows what happens if you would eat it. Some people eat them. Some people say if you boil them three times, then you can eat them. I like decisive, definitive answers. I'm not so good with the gray area. I tend to be kind of black and white. So I decided to just stick to finding those few edible species that I knew for sure and I knew I could find. Set my foraging parameters within the doable possible zone, and then I wouldn't get frustrated. That's all you have to do in life, and that's what I tend to do with things. Try to avoid frustration. Like last night, I went to a swim class. I just got promoted to level 2 in my swim class, and I was getting very frustrated, and there was a point where I thought, I'm going to drown, and I felt like I was going to cry, but I kept going. It was within the acceptable limits of frustration. Anyway, back to mushrooms. So since I really like to hike, and when I hike, I like to keep up a good pace. So it's also a cardio workout, because then I can say, well, I don't have to go to the gym today because I hiked, because I'm also a little bit lazy. Looking for mushrooms while we were hiking was starting to also drive me crazy, because we would have to stop like every 10 feet. We'd be like, walk, 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 walk. Oh, mushroom, walk, walk, walk. Oh, mushroom. And how can you keep your heart rate elevated doing that? You can't. It's too intermittent. You know, and a girl's got to keep in shape, right? Especially when you work in my business and you're eating all day for pay. Got to keep yourself in shape. So if I stopped for every little fungal fruit body that popped up out of the ground, I would start looking like a puffball. Now, you have to be a mushroom person to know what that is. That's a mushroom joke. Very niche humor there. FYI, puffballs are totally spherical mushrooms that look like golf balls. And we found one this weekend, but I'll get to that later on in the show. So anyway, we kind of abandoned the club and decided that on our weekly hikes, we would only stop for good edibles. Only the ones we knew for sure. And forget the rest. Just leave them. So there's about probably five, six species that we know for sure. Except for morels. They're the exception. Because morels, you have to actually get down on the ground and like squat down and really look for them. And they're worth it because they're so delicious. So they would be outside the realm of the cardio hiking mushroom limits. But this year we only found 2 morels the entire spring. So that was a total bust anyway. So that was the plan for the summer. Only the good edibles. And then, of course, the drought of 2010 came along. And guess what? No fungus among us. Mushrooms need moisture. Without it, they just don't come up. They just stay in the ground. So if you get a good rain on a Wednesday, by Saturday, you have a great crop. And it's not so long that the bugs can get to them. So that's what you want. Wednesday, Thursday, you get a good rain. Saturday, you get a good harvest. But the rain never came this summer. And the forest out there is dry and dusty. And so on our hikes, I hardly even looked down anymore. We had really just given up. Except I looked down to keep an eye out for snakes and to keep from tripping and falling. Because there are snakes up there in the Hudson Valley. You didn't think there were, but there are rattlesnakes right there in northern Westchester. It's pretty scary. So it was a total bust year for mycology, at least around here, or at least for us. Maybe other people found stuff. But other people, you know, find stuff out there. I was listening to NPR, stuck in traffic one day, and they were doing a piece on home canning, and they had on Eugenia Bone, who's this very interesting home canning authority. And she was going on and on about how she lives in Colorado, and this year she found 40 pounds of morels and 50 pounds of chanterelles, and oh, it was so great, and she has so many. What's she going to do with them? Because she was talking about how you shouldn't can mushrooms because of the botulism spores. Well, you know what? Screw you, Eugenia Bone. Try living here in New York and only going mushroom hunting on the weekend and only finding morels and chanterelles in sporadic years. Not so easy, right? Living in the Rockies, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. So don't get all smug about your mushrooms, okay? Anyway, so last Saturday, or this past Saturday, was the first annual Heritage Radio party. And it was held here at Roberta's. And of course, we attended, and it was great. And we ate piles of heritage meats and Brooklyn Grange greens and drank 6-point beers. And we had a great old time. And then after the party, we drove upstate to the tiny bungalow and went to sleep. So then Sunday morning, bright and early, off to the Appalachian Trail for a hike. So after this year's dismal fungal output, there we had no expectations of finding anything. So we just start walking. We usually do this loop. And I said, let's do the loop in reverse this time, just for a little variety, just to kind of see things from a different angle. So there we are, just walking along, not even looking down, not looking for mushrooms, intentionally not looking for mushrooms to avoid disappointment, avoidance at all costs. And I just happen to look sideways, and boom, right there, a basketball-sized hen of the woods mushroom, a Gryphula frondosa, for all you Latin speakers, a maitake, for all you Japanese speakers, or dancing mushroom, a Klapperschwamm, as they call them in Germany, right there at the base of an oak tree, in perfect shape. It wasn't slimy, it wasn't rotting, there were no bugs on it that I could see. It was like a purveyor, a mushroom purveyor had gone out and just planted it there for me to find, like it was like a mushroom Easter egg hunt. And they put it out there just to make me find it. So these hen of the woods, if you've never seen them, they're like this ruffly polypore mushroom, and they grow in big bunches. They're polypores as opposed to like gilled mushrooms, like your basic portobello has gills. These have pores. And that Japanese name, maitake, means dancing mushroom, because these mushrooms taste so good that when people find them, they do a little happy mushroom hunting dance right there on the spot in the woods. So that morning, as we were leaving the house to go hiking, we weren't expecting to find anything. I stuck a paper shopping bag in my backpack, and then I almost put it back. Now, when you collect mushrooms, you always put them into brown paper bags like lunch bags or wax paper bags. Never plastic. Plastic destroys them. And for years now, I've always kept this little wad of brown paper bags in my hiking backpack. And then last year, I took them out at the end of the year. And then this year, for some reason, I put this little brown paper shopping bag in there, the kind with little handles. I don't know why. It was like I knew what was coming. I sort of did it as like a joke, almost, because I knew it would be empty. It's like going out trick-or-treating and nobody answers the door. That's how it feels. So I had my bag in my bag, and I had my little tiny knife, and I took out my little tiny mushroom knife, and I dug that thing up, and it must have weighed 3-4 pounds. And I know that these are not rare mushrooms. People find them all the time, and they can weigh up to like 50 pounds, but not in the dinky little dried up place where we go hunting, like up in the Adirondacks, people find them. And this was the first one that I had ever found that was actually in good shape. And it was big enough for me. I'll take it. It was fine. So into the bag it went, finished the hike, carried our little shopping bag of treasure out to the car, got home and put it in the fridge. Now, what did I do with it? Well, we'll talk about that after the break. Be right back. Welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. I'm your host, Chef Smarty Pants, Erica Weitz. And if you're a fan of Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show, you can find us on Facebook. Just search for Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. And you can become a fan. Let me know what you think. And there's a picture up of this famous mushroom that I'm talking about. You can also leave comments on the Heritage Radio Network homepage for the station. We'd love to hear from you there. And remember, you can always listen to any Heritage Radio Network show on iTunes. You can podcast any of them. So you can listen while you're driving, while you're hiking, while you're cooking, whatever you want to do, you can listen. Okay, so after I found this Klapperschwanz mushroom, hen of the woods, I put it in the fridge, and then Adam said that it was a good day to go pick up big rocks, because that's another activity we enjoy, is picking up big rocks. We have this rock wall that we built a few years ago around the herb garden, and we want to expand it. So every year or so, we drive the car down the hill, down the road to where there's a lot of rocks in the woods, and we haul big rocks out of the woods and into the car. I lead a very exciting and interesting life. So off we went, and well, it was, you know, as if the myco gods, the mushroom sprites out there, had not rewarded us enough that day in this terrible mushroom season. Adam suddenly calls me over to the edge of the road, and he pointed at something, and I thought it was an old styrofoam mannequin head, like the kind you see on 14th Street with wig, or used to see on 14th Street displaying the wigs that the drag queens buy. You know what I'm talking about? They don't have faces. They're just like white styrofoam heads. That's what I thought it was. But it turned out it was a bowling ball-sized puffball mushroom. It seriously looked like that, like a wig head. Now, sadly, it was a little old and a little buggy and dried up and not a good specimen. You don't want to ever eat old mushrooms. You want them fresh. But it could have made for some good eating. Puffballs are these crazy mushrooms that look, they start out sort of looking like half golf balls, and then they get bigger and bigger and bigger and rounder until they grow into these giant white spherical things. And if you cut them open, they're just completely like white, dense, pure mushroom inside. They're pretty crazy. Now, I've never actually eaten one because I've never found one that was big enough. Because when they're little teeny ones, you don't necessarily want to pick them because they could be button stage destroying angel mushrooms, Amanita verrosa, which is the most deadly, hence the name destroying angel. And when they come up and they're little, they look just like puffballs. So you only want to pick the puffballs when they're really big. This one was really big, but the bugs had gotten to it. So I've never had it, but it could have been quite the fungal entree. You could have sliced that thing up, breaded it, fried it. That would have been some seriously good eating, but just as well, because we had our hen cooling off in the fridge waiting for us. So we slept the rocks, got the rocks home, had to, of course, vacuum out the car because it was full of dirt, and then packed up and headed back here to Brooklyn. Now, hen of the woods mushrooms, if you've never eaten them, are very, very delicious. They are what the mushroom books call a choice edible. A choice edible. You may have eaten them in restaurants. They show up usually around now. There's a guy who sells them at Union Square this time of year, too. And they're usually roasted. Best off roasted in a wood oven. They taste really good. And I've, like at Craft Bar, I've eaten a roasted hen of the wood mushroom sandwich. I don't know if it's still on their menu, but they're very meaty and mushroomy, and they're quite delicious. And since they're so tasty, we, of course, aren't the only species who enjoy eating them. So when I got home, I trimmed off the base, the like dirt-encrusted stem. I got rid of that. And then I broke that hen up into smaller florets, and I put them in a big bowl of salt water to soak. Now, Nora, you probably say, oh, no, you never wash your mushrooms. Well, you want to wash these mushrooms, because imagine like a mushroom that was like a head of green leaf lettuce, where you had all these different layers, and it had just come out of the garden, full of dirt and potentially bugs. So you want to wash this mushroom. And you don't really have to worry so much about washing mushrooms, because when you cook them, you're driving out all the moisture anyway. So what does it matter? People say, oh, they soak up all this water. Yeah, but you're cooking them. And what does cooking do? It drives the water out of food. At least dry heat cooking does. So relax. Anyway, putting them in the salt water serves two purposes. It cleans them But it also kills off all the bugs, because bugs can't live in water, and they certainly can't live in salt water. And it's a good thing I did it, because there were about 6 gigantic millipedes that had made their home in that mushroom. So all those guys died, sunk to the bottom. I took the mushroom out of the water, gave it a little rinse, broke it up into smaller florets, dried those off, and then tossed them with good extra virgin olive oil and Maldon salt. Maldon salt is this flaky sea salt from England that's kind of expensive, and I reserve it for special occasions. And I thought this was a special occasion, so it got the fancy salt. I spread all that out onto a sheet pan, threw it in a 400-degree oven, and about 40 minutes later, all that water had cooked out, and the little hen feathers had crisped up and caramelized and gotten tender and roasted, and they were spectacular. Really rich, really meaty flavor to them, great smell, delicious. But you know what? I only ate one piece. Because even though when you go foraging for wild mushrooms, you hopefully know what you're picking. And I'm certainly not encouraging anybody who doesn't know what they're doing to go out there. Don't go out and pick mushrooms this weekend and get sick and then call me up and blame me, because it's not my fault. This is the disclaimer. You're adults. You know what you're doing. Don't go out there if you don't know. But even if you do know, and I know with this one because it doesn't really have any poisonous lookalikes, you still want to be careful. And so usually they say, eat a couple little bites, wait a night, and then eat it the next night if you're okay. So even though I know for 100% sure that it's a true hen of the woods, I like to practice prudence in some ways. So I only took a few nibbles. I went to bed. I felt fine. I'm still alive. I'm feeling good. So tonight, I'll be doing the maitake happy dancing mushroom dance in my kitchen, because I'm going to take the rest of those golden roasted little chickies from that hen, and I'm going to toss them with some caramelized garlic and some maybe grated pecorino romano. And I have these little tiny heirloom tomatoes that I dehydrated and preserved in olive oil from the summer, and I'm going to mix all those up together. I'm going to put them over some whole wheat linguine. And oh yeah, it's going to be a Klapperschwamm party at Shea Smarty Pants tonight. But if you're listening to the show next week and we happen to be airing a rerun, I may have made a little identification mistake. Don't say I didn't warn you about this stuff. So hopefully I'll be back here next week with a new show. But if not, it's been a pleasure serving you, and we'll see you in mushroom heaven.